Welcome to Crosstalk. I'm Peter Lavelle. We're told Libya's Gaddafi must go, but the royal family of Bahrain must stay. Is this a double standard? Is freedom allowed for some while others are not worthy of the same? And will the West later regret its differing approaches to the Arab awakening? Crosstalk different reactions towards the Arab awakening. I'm joined by Hussein Abdullah in Pensacola. He's a director of Americans for Democracy and Human Rights in Bahrain. In San Francisco, we cross to Stephen Zunis. He's a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco. And in New York, we have Matthew Schaefer. He is a writer for the National Review Online. All right, gentlemen, this is Crosstalk. That means you can jump in anytime you want. But before we start our discussion here, let's take a look at some of the issues and reactions to the Arab awakening.
What is at stake? Democracy or security interests? Revolutionary sandstorms have brought thousands to the streets across the Arab world. People's power toppled Western-backed dictators in Egypt and Tunisia. Meanwhile, in predominantly Shiite Bahrain, ruled by a Sunni minority, people have been sluggishly silenced. And as Saudi troops intervened, some point to an obvious double standard. Home to the U.S. Fifth Fleet and Saudi's neighbor, a Bahrain striving towards self-determination appears unacceptable as a transcounter to the interests of the West. While in Libya, democracy is seen as a priority and backed by NATO military efforts and a U.N. mandate.
Under the U.N. mandate, we had an obligation to protect civilians from potential atrocities, and we have succeeded in that.
Does Western military intervention in defense of the rebels manifest a blatant double standard? Democratic rights of citizens and aims for greater political freedoms are supported in countries like Egypt, Tunisia, and Libya, but seem secondary in Bahrain or Yemen, where Western military and security interests are at stake. Syria is just another example. Not immune to the revolutionary wave, demonstrations continue across the country. And the U.S. State Department is very quick to condemn the violence. As the Arab awakening continues, what will hold sway? National interests or the rights of the people themselves? Daria Chernyshova for Crosstalk RT.
Okay, Stephen, I'd like to go to you first here. Mr. Obama, the U.S. president, said that the United States has intervened or some form of intervention into Libya because of the need to protect civilians. And he said innocent people were targeted for killing. Hospitals and ambulances were attacked. Journalists were arrested. And today, as the day we're doing the program here, The Independent wrote about Bahrain, one doctor, an intensive care specialist, was held after she photographed weeping over a dead protester, and another arrested in a theater room while an operation on a patient was going on. I mean, it seems like that's a very blatant double standard there, and it's only going to get worse. Mm-hmm. So I started out by asking, well, are we going to regret our different reactions to what is fundamentally the same phenomenon?
I think very much so. The United States has a clear double standard when it comes to human rights abuses by autocratic regimes we don't like. But autocratic regimes that are considered allies, we seem to be willing to give them a free pass. The repression in Bahrain has increased over the past couple months. It is becoming an increasingly brutal police state, and yet the United States stands by the monarchy. The United States has refused to condemn the intervention by the neighboring family dictatorships to suppress what is at least as legitimate a pro-democracy movement as we've seen in other Arab states.
Matthew, what do you think about that in New York?
I think that we've heard the phrase double standard thrown around. I think that what we're actually seeing is a relatively consistent set of standards applied to wildly differing circumstances. In Libya, there was an urgent call to action. The Arab League asked us to intervene. Forces were moving towards Benghazi, and Muammar Gaddafi promised to raise the city and kill its citizens. In Bahrain, there are these abuses, and they're tragic, and they're awful, and they're evil. There's not something that we can do. We can't stop a motorcade from going to a particular city because these forces are in the same cities. They're both in Manama. So there's just not the same urgent call for a response.
Hussein, what do you think about that? I mean, they're different enough to have different reactions? Because fundamentally, is the message of the United States supposedly supports democracy, the right to protest, and all other things that we would consider normal in a civil society. Do you see that the reactions are different and are a double standard?
It is a clear double standard. I think the U.S. policy towards Bahrain is short-sighted. It's going to fire back on the United States, and it's going to hurt the American interest in the region, because basically it's going to radicalize the pro-democracy movement in the country, because the people in Bahrain think that there is a green light from the United States to Saudi Arabia and the government of Bahrain to crack down on peaceful protesters. You know, you cannot support peaceful protesters in Libya or Egypt or any or other places and then just turn the blind eye toward the legitimate grievances in Bahrain. I think it's going to basically turn the people away from the legitimate causes and maybe radicalize them, and that will hurt the American interest in Bahrain.
You know, Stephen, if I can go back to you, I think it's really interesting if we look at the Arab awakening starting in Tunisia going all the way to today. And my read of it is I don't see a fundamental anti-Americanism element in it at all. You see the people striving for the right things I think we would all in this program would agree to. But as the different reactions are so stark, don't you think the region's going to say, and looking at the younger generation, saying, it's just the West looking to find their new man in these new countries that have thrown off old dictators that were friends of the West?
Mm-hmm. Well said. It's unfortunate because the United States has been quite fortunate for the very reason you mentioned, that there has not been a strong anti-American orientation of these pro-democracy movements, at least so far. But as long as the United States is seen to support the Bahraini regime, it's really going to hurt us. Now, I don't think anybody's advocating military intervention in Bahrain. In fact, I'm ambivalent about the military intervention in Libya. But at least we can call for more forcefully for an end of the repression. We can sever our strategic ties to that autocratic regime, or at least threaten to. We can end the security assistance to that regime. We can make it very clear that kind of repression is illegitimate. We really need to be on the right side of history here, and the history is moving more and more towards democracy. And as long as the United States is seen to be on the wrong side, or at least the wrong side in some cases, it's going to really hurt our image, and it's going to encourage more extremist elements that may not be that interested in democracy.
Matthew, if I can go to you, is Saudi Arabia on the right side of history?
No, certainly not. But just because somebody is wrong, that doesn't mean it's something that we can do to make them perfect again. So, I mean, talking about, for example, you talked about how the protesters haven't sort of shown a strong anti-American element. Well, of course they haven't shown it. I mean, they want American intervention. They want American help. So there could be anti-American elements that we haven't identified yet. But more importantly, first of all, the U.S. has strongly called for an end to the violence, end to human rights abuses. President Obama has been totally clear about that. But in terms of going farther than that, you know, we have the Fifth Fleet station in Bahrain. Saudi Arabia is very powerful. America's military is already stretched. Some of our geopolitical relations are already strained. I don't think there's anything we can feasibly do to oust the Khalifis or the Assads that is actually within our power right now. So condemn them, intervene in Libya to send a message, but we can't go much further than that.
Okay, Hussein, I mean, security is always brought up in these discussions here. And looking at the right side of history, give me your prognosis. I mean, if the crackdown continues in Bahrain, and it's 70% of the population that is treated as a second-class citizen here, the longer this goes on, how much more disillusioned are they going to become, and I'm talking about these oppressed people, with the West, and particularly with the United States, and given the scheme of history, and we never know how these things are going to turn out, and I think we've all learned that over the last few months, just how safe will the Fifth Fleet be there if the things turn radically against the royal family? Will the Fifth Fleet still be welcome there?
Look, the U.S. administration not even listening to their own Congress. There are several members of Congress yesterday issued statements and letters to the Obama administration to immediately intervene in Bahrain through diplomatic pressure. There were a few senators in the United States Senate also issued such statement calling on the president and the State Department to condemn the violence toward protesters. I mean, yes, there is a general statement that we are against the human rights violations, but when it comes to Bahrain, Hillary Clinton made it clear that the Al Khalifa regime is a strategic ally, they're important to our interest. In other way, the message was to the people of Bahrain that basically we are siding toward the government. And what that is going to do, the people of Bahrain right now looking for an ally, they're looking toward the United States for help. And what kind of help? We're not advocating here military help. We're basically advocating for political help to mediate into the situation to resolve it. But if the United States is not helping, if the United States is going to turn the blind eye, then they're going to look into some other ally. And that will be, guess who? Iran. Because the majority of the people in Bahrain are Shiite. And when they look into Iran, Iran is going to manipulate this situation, and it's going to be very much difficult for the United States to maintain a secure base in the country where they are ignoring the majority of the people and the legitimate grievances of the country.
Okay, Stephen, can I go to you real quickly before the break? I want to talk about Iran now and in the second part of the program. Is this opening a door to Iran?
The pro-democracy movement is not opening a door to Iran, but the continued U.S. support for the regime and the ongoing repression, I think, very well could. And what's been very upsetting is that there's some people in administration who are exaggerating the Iranian influence in the pro-democracy struggle as a rationalization for continued backing of the
monarchy. I'm going to have to jump in here, and I'll let you finish when we come back from the break. And after that break, we'll continue our discussion on Western policy the Arab world. Stay with RT.
I'm living in a country that doesn't understand that there's more violence in the streets of this country than there are in the streets of Afghanistan or Baghdad.
Then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun, steals a car, tries to run, but he don't get far as mama cries. As a crowd gathers round, an angry young man face down in the street with a gun in his hand, the ghetto.
We have seen the damage it has done to health, the environment, more chemicals with the poor crops. We do not want any more new GMOs.
Our core system is just, that was a dismal experience, and I'm just appalled that that's allowed to go on in America.
We are eating this, unfortunately, because we don't know it's in our food. There's no labeling. Therefore, we're being used like a laboratory experiment. We're being used as guinea pigs.
So now we have more questions than we have answers in regards to who owns life.
Wealthy British scion Zach Wilson.
Investment activist Max Kaiser.
Markets, finance, scandal. Find out what's really happening to the global economy with Max Kaiser. For a no-holds-barred look at the global financial headlines, tune in to Kaiser Report on RT.
Welcome back to Crosstalk. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're talking about the Arab revolutions. Okay, Stephen, if I can go back to you in San Francisco. Before we went to the break, we were talking about the Iranian angle here. I mean, they must be very amused watching how the United States is tripping all over itself with former allies in the region here, when Iran, for all intents and purposes, has been pretty consistent, if you like it or not, consistent.
Yeah, I was very disappointing to hear Dennis Ross speak at a conference I was at. In fact, I'd spoken at in a previous panel in Washington, D.C., where Ross, who is has an important position in the administration as a special advisor on the greater Middle East for the Obama administration, he was going on and on about how Iran was manipulating the crisis in Bahrain, et cetera, not one word criticizing the repression. I mean, it reminded me so much of the Cold War, whenever any kind of left-wing pro-democracy movement challenging a right-wing dictatorship was somehow this conspiracy that came from the Soviet Union and Cuba. But, as President Kennedy reminded us, those who make peaceful evolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. And that by supporting the continued repression, it very well could drive some elements of the opposition into more radical hands. So far, the movement is very nationalistic, not pro-Iranian at all, but this could change if the pro-democracy struggle sees Iran as their ally, not the United States and the West.
Matthew, isn't it really just the case Hussein and Pensacola, jump in. Go ahead.
I completely agree with Stephen. I completely agree with Stephen. Look, the only political association that their member were not attacked, Al-Wifaq, their leader, Sheikh Ali Salman, stated yesterday that they cannot control the street in Bahrain. These youth in Bahrain who are seeing that their parents, their brothers, their sisters getting arrested, eventually they're going to have to become violent. They eventually have to face violent with violent. And that will not serve anyone, especially will not serve the United States' interest in Bahrain.
Matthew, it's interesting is that really this story is about Saudi Arabia and what it wants. And ever since Mubarak was overthrown in Egypt, the Saudis probably feel pretty scared. I mean, because it was Mubarak and the Saudi royal family were the two pillars there, and the Saudis are not going to budge. And, I mean, it seems like this marriage of tribal feudalism and modern capitalism is really beginning to fall apart. It's breaking here. Why doesn't the United States really make that clear to the Saudis? Say, we've really got to have a new kind of relationship, because the current regime that you have in the region is untenable.
I'll borrow one of our president's favorite quotes and say that the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. I mean, we've seen that there are calls for liberal democracy in the Middle East. I believe that the Al-Sauds are on the wrong side of history, and Saudi Arabia will be a democracy sometime in the future. But if the U.S. takes an aggressive posture, will promote alienation and backlash. But I just want to go back to one of the things that Stephen said, to say that when he said that essentially the U.S. has a sort of hypocritical response because, we're just supporting any dictatorship that will help us out, I want to just sort of draw a parallel to the repression in Belarus. We're seeing similar things go on in Belarus. And we're not refusing to intervene because we like the dictator, Lukashenko, in Belarus. We're not intervening. We're not doing anything because we simply don't have the capabilities. And I really want to press Stephen and Hussein on what specifically we ought to be doing.
And
I don't think the
Belarus.
U.S. is by any means supporting the dictatorship. We're not supporting the dictatorship. We've condemned the violence. We've made an example of Gaddafi. But we just simply don't have the ability to affect all the good we would like to.
Stephen? Mm-hmm. Jump in.
I'm not talking about intervention. I'm talking about stopping the security assistance to the regime, providing them, with the weapons of the instruments of repression, and making very clear that we're going to sever these kinds of economic and strategic ties so they continue doing this kind of thing. I mean, we put sanctions on Syria and Libya appropriately against their repression.
Why don't
we do the same for Bahrain?
I think it's misstating the...
Go ahead, Hussein in Pensacola.
I think the fact is we are supporting Bahrain. The gas canister that are used against the peaceful protesters in Bahrain, made in the United States. There are weapons sold to Bahrain on yearly basis to Bahrain. Bahrain get aid from us every year equal to $20 million. We paid them aid annual rent to rent their base. So saying that we're not, we don't have influence or we cannot change the situation or our hands are tied, I think it's inaccurate because we have a lot of say-so and we have a lot of influence on the regime there because we basically, for they are in power because we are supporting them.
Matthew, one of the things I find very interesting is that the United States and many of you could say the United States waffles from country to country. And isn't it just because the United States wants to make sure there's an outcome that it can live with, actually have an ally, a new ally with a more democratic face or a new ally that will attempt to reform, real or imagined? I mean, that's what the waffling is all about, because the United States just can't say, in principle, we are going to move forward in this direction and we're going to support protesters and democracy. Why can't we do that? Because we won't, because we're looking after our interests first and foremost, right?
I think, yes, we are looking after our interests. We're also looking after geopolitical stability. I mean, if you want to talk about death, repression, horrible things, I mean, those things are as likely or more likely to result from war than they are from a repressive regime. So, I mean, what were you to do something to massively destabilize the Middle East, make the al-Assads feel so threatened that they had to act out when, I mean, it is a dying ruling family. That could, you know, cause a lot more death and destruction and repression on a short-term basis than maintaining geopolitical stability and promoting democracy with soft power would.
What do you think about that, Stephen? I mean, I think that...
Go ahead, Stephen.
We're talking about soft power. We're talking about using the leverage, the enormous leverage the United States has on countries like Bahrain in terms of the security assistance and economic relationship and that kind of thing. But the thing is that you put a lid on a boiling pot. That's where the danger comes from. That's where the explosion happens. I see no contradiction between America's security interest and supporting democracy in that part of the world, because democracies are much more stable in the long term than dictatorships. So when you have dictatorships, that's when you get the much greater likelihood of war, of instability, and the like. So there's no contradiction to me. We really do need, for our own, even putting aside the moral and legal questions, for our own national security interest, we need to support democracy and stop supporting dictatorships.
Hussein, you wanted to jump in there.
Yes, look, whoever is advising Obama on policy toward Bahrain or the Persian Gulf countries, I think is doing a big disservice, because the policy toward Bahrain, I mean, in another way, somehow supporting dictatorship in Bahrain or in GCC countries serve our interests, I think is going to backfire, is going to hurt American interests, it's going to cause these nations, these people, to turn into someone else that probably will not be an ally to us, probably is going to hurt our existence in that region. So it's in the best interest of the Obama administration and the United States of America to find new allies in these movements, because these regimes, these autocratic regimes that have been ruling these countries for over 200 years, not going to sustain in their current status.
Matthew, it looked like you were boiling for a second. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so Stephen and Hussein have both clarified that what they want is soft power. I mean, first of all, I'll just point out that would still be a double standard relative to what we're doing in Libya. So if that's the talking point here. But more importantly, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what's going on inside the administration. What I would guess, though, is sort of the Obama administration is sort of holding those cards. Things are bad in Bahrain, they're bad in Saudi Arabia, but they could get a lot worse. And so maybe the Obama administration wants to maintain the ability to exercise that soft power in the future. And I hate, once again, to be sort of the cynical skunk here, but, I mean, democratic movements haven't worked out for the U.S. or for liberalism in Iran in 1979, in the Gaza Strip, for example. So I'm not sure. I just think it's kind of a bit naive to say democracy always furthers liberalism and U.S. interests, particularly in the Middle East.
Stephen, go right ahead.
Those are spirit... those are total spurious analogies. Hamas won elections in parliamentary elections in Palestine as a reaction to the Israeli occupation and to the corruption and autocratic rule of Fatah. Similarly, Iran, the mullahs, the reactionaries, ended up hijacking that revolution in part because the U.S. backed the Shah for so many years, he was able to crush and marginalize the more democratic and moderate elements of the revolution. So the Ayatollahs were able to fill in the political vacuum. And, you know, the longer we support the Bahraini regime, the more likely it could end up in that scenario. But the difference in Bahrain, for one thing, Bahrainis don't traditionally follow Ayatollahs like you find in Iran. Those that do are much follow the more quietist, you know, Ayatollahs, people like Sistani and those in that tradition. Again, I don't think it's anything that's the idea of Bahrain could somehow, you know, turn into this fundamentalist Islamist state. I think it shows a real ignorance of Bahraini politics. I should quickly add, there are divisions within the administration on this issue. I know for a fact this has been a real battle, in fact, about what U.S. policy should be in Bahrain. And thus far, the more hawkish elements, Secretary of State Clinton, Secretary of Defense Gates, have ended up winning. But I think this could change if the American people, as we did in terms of U.S. support for El Salvador and U.S. support for Indonesia during the height of the repression in those countries, I think if enough people raised enough of a fuss, and this was reflected in Capitol Hill, I think there is a chance of changing U.S. policy. So I really do think there's a hope in this administration for more enlightened views.
All right, gentlemen, I'm afraid I'm going to have to jump in.
I have to hear from people.
We've run out of time. Many thanks to my guests today in San Francisco, New York, and Pensacola. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, crosstalk rules.